AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world. Whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Audrey Montoya is US-based needle felting artist whose creations have to be seen to be believed. They are kitsch, they are whimsical, they are poignant, and they are amazing. In this first part of our needle exchange, Audrey and I talk about how she came to create needle felting creations, the influence of childhood icons and pop culture, and how her watercolour background set her on the path to making these creatures that have a slightly whimsical and slightly melancholic quality to them. Audrey's creations are almost like documentaries of her experiences. They're her expressions. They're almost a form of catharsis. And it's just wonderful to talk to someone who's taking needle felting in a new and interesting direction, but at the same time is clearly just producing the art that she was made to create. I think if you haven't seen Audrey's work already, you've got to go and find her on Instagram. It's really amazing. I just love needle felting when it's put into left field uses, and Audrey pushes all the right buttons as far as I'm concerned. So this is a great conversation. I think you're really going to enjoy getting to know her. And obviously, we'll be back next week for the second part of the conversation. Thanks, as always, for listening to the show. I hope you're enjoying it. If you do know anybody who's interested in needle felting, please do point them in the direction of this episode. I think it's super rewarding. And if you haven't tried stabbing a bit of wool with a needle yourself yet, give it a go. I tell you, it's so therapeutic. Anyway, I'll be back next week with another part of the conversation with Audrey. So until then, enjoy the show. So I wanted to start by asking you, I can't decide whether C-3PO is a genuine kitsch icon or not. And he lives on my Christmas tree. We get him out at Christmas and he hangs out on our Christmas tree. And he, I think, is the first thing on your Instagram feed. So I was like, C-3PO is obviously a thing for you. I just wanted your take, really.
I think C-3PO is a kitsch icon. What's funny about that picture that you're talking about on my Instagram is that that's like the first toy I ever collected, and I started collecting toys. So that's funny. I forgot that was on there.
He's just so good. And I think that the amazing thing, I don't know, there's like, I was going through and I was looking through your Instagram and I was like traveling back in time. And after a while, I just started writing like phrases, because at first I was like writing sentences. And by the end of my notes, I'm just like, Garbage Pail Kids, Star Wars, Duplo, Garfield. Yeah. You know, it's just this like sensory assault.
That's funny that you said Garbage Pail Kids, because my sister just gave me a bunch of cards, like Garbage Pail cards for my birthday last month. So that's pretty cool.
I feel like they must, because actually I didn't see them come up. I would have thought there would have been more reference of that kind of stuff, because it feels like they're in the same universe as you.
Very much, very much. They're just so gross, but not gross. They're great. I love them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, were they an influence on you? Were they a thing when you were a kid, or are you a bit too young for that?
I was not aware of Garbage Pail Kids when I was little. So that was something that I came across as an adult.
Mm.
But when I found them, I was like, that's so cool, because I had Cabbage Patch Kids mm-hmm. when I was a kid. So it was like the perfect like segue into like gross, cute stuff.
They really were. I'm trying to sort of see. I just feel like there's this sense of like looking at your early work and stuff that just things stood out to you a lot. Like even like, I don't know. I don't really know where to begin. This is quite an abstract conversation we're going to have, but I feel like it's an Audrey Montoya kind of conversation okay. because it will just be like, we'll get talking about the needle felting somewhere down the line, but it's kind of like, you know, there's just, you've got watercolors of, I don't know, like toys from Toy Story up against Star Wars figures being threatened by a bowl of jelly or something, you know. It's kind of like, oh, where does all that come from? What's the story?
Well, I started collecting toys mostly because I needed still life subject matter. And I was like, I can control these little toys and they look like people. So I don't actually have to work with people or go find somebody to like model for me. So I was like, I'm just going to use toys. And so I just started collecting them and like putting them in weird situations. And I really was focused in the beginning of being really good at watercolor. Mm. Like I just wanted to be the best watercolorist there was. So I really went into it and was like, I'm going to do all the detail. I'm going to have all the crazy backgrounds. I'm going to do all the things and learn all the watercolor stuff. And they were just sort of my muse, I guess, yeah. or my just something that I could really control, because very controlling when it comes to my art.
I mean, fair play, to be honest, because if you want to get good at watercolors, I would imagine C-3PO and other shiny characters like that are real, like, if you can get those guys down, you can do kind of anything.
Exactly. And, like, doing shiny things or, like, making things look shiny or plastic was really, like, my jam for a really long time. I absolutely loved it. It was, like, my favorite part of my paintings was making them look shiny and realistic.
Yeah, I mean, even in the early days, I'm just looking at them now, you know, you've got like shiny Garfields and shiny Duplo toys and stuff, but it's also, and even like your magnetic letters that go on the fridge.
Yes.
But what's interesting to me is it's like, it's the choices. It's not just like that they're shiny, but I don't know, they're like all iconic or something.
Mm-hmm. So they're all very, most of it is stuff that I played with when I was little. I have a big brother and a big sister who were kids in the 80s. So I had a lot of like He-Man and Care Bear stuff. And I just loved it. So it just reminded me of being a kid. But I was a grown up and I got to play with these toys as a grown up. So it was pretty pretty fun. And, you know, each of the characters sort of have their own personality outside of a painting. So it's interesting when you put different characters together. Like if you put a Care Bear next to, like, I think I have one with that's a Care Bear next to a what's that book? Where's Waldo?
Right.
I put
a
Care Bear in a Where's Waldo thing, and that is just like, to me, it was really interesting, the play between the ideas of Where's Waldo and then there's this Care Bear on there. Like, what does that mean together? Like, I don't think I really had like a set like, this is what this means, but I just wanted the viewer to like, how do these things come together? How are they functioning together?
It's the kind of licensing mashup that no lawyers would touch in the country. Do you know what I mean? But you do see, like, sometimes you see, like, you know, Marvel and DC, you do get overlaps between these kind of brands. So I guess you're just playing with those things, aren't you? Butting them up against one another.
Yes. Yeah, it really used to bug my husband because he was one of those kids that when he played, he kept like all his like Ninja Turtles together, and there was only, if he was playing, it was only Ninja Turtles. Right. And I was always like, here's a troll and here's my Barbie and they're gonna go on an adventure together.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, is that so? I mean, It's obviously like, I just feel like there's this, like, there's this kitsch thing. There's a 1980s, 1990s nostalgia to all of your work. And I know we are going to get on to the needle related stuff in the first place. But I just think there's just this real strong theme throughout where you've just gone, wow, I'm going to punch wows together and see what happens as much as I can.
All that stuff is just sort of like in my brain all the time. Like, I grew up watching TV. Like, I remember my best Christmas one year was my parents got me a VCR and a TV and a bunch of movies to watch. And that was, I just love pop, American pop culture, or just pop culture in general. And it's just like in my brain, like smooshing around in there. And then the paintings really sort of like cemented that, like, visuals or the aesthetic of those toys and like the cartoons and the movies and all that stuff in my brain, that it sort of just now comes out in the needle felted sculptures. But I don't think I would be doing the needle felted sculptures I'm doing now if I hadn't done all that watercolor stuff before.
Can you describe them to everybody?
They are, let me look at them.
They are hard to describe.
They're very weird. I think of them as weird sculptures. Like, if somebody asks me what I do and they've never seen it, I just tell them I make weird needle felted sculptures. They're very cartoony, I would say. I like parts of them to be sort of realistic, like mouths or eyes. And then some of them, parts of it are very cartoony. Sometimes, like, I'll do it really, something really realistically in it. Like, I made these pizzas that look really realistic, but then the eyes are really cartoony. And they're kind of gross, and they're all kind of tired and sad. Sad, weird, needle-felted sculptures.
Yeah. And you said that you use them. It's almost like there's a catharsis to them. Like, I feel like you take your emotions and you build the sculptures out of those.
Yes. So whatever, say I had a bad day or a parenting fail or something, I might go and sit in my needle felting chair and like needle felt about it, like make a little sad slice of cake or something. Like, oh man, I yelled at my kid, but I did. So.
I'm glad that you, so I've got two kids and I just yelled at them. And then in a blink of an eye, sort of forget that I do it, because otherwise I just dwell on that. I remember the first time, and my 7-year-old reminds me of this, like once when she was a baby, I chucked my wife her mobile phone and it bounced on the sofa and bounced off of Flora's head and made her cry, and I felt really bad about that for like a day. And now Flora just does that every now and again. She goes, "Dad, do you remember?" Because she don't remember it, but she knows that it made me cry. She'd be like, "Do you remember that time that you threw a mobile phone at my head?" I was like, "That's not what happened. Don't make up the stories." But I like it. Do you feel better once you've made the piece? Do you feel like you've put the emotions away in that piece?
I do. It really helps me sort of think about it and work through it. And, you know, if I do yell at my kid, I'll go apologize. But it helps me, like, move through it. And then to see something that sort of feels as, like disappointed in myself as I am, like, it's kind of nice to, like, make this thing. And then it's looking at me and it's just like, nope, you shouldn't have done that.
There's a funny contrast, I think, between, like, the sort of, if you like, the cocky weirdness of your work and then you, because you're quite humble, I think. You don't big yourself up that much.
Yeah, I mean, well, really, this whole needle felting thing started just like, it was just like an explosion. Like, I really didn't think it was going to be anything. And so now that it is a thing, it's really weird. Because I've really only been needle felting seriously for like the last 2 years or so. So it's like, it's strange because I feel like I don't know everything about needle felting, but I know a lot about watercolor.
Yeah.
But I know a lot about watercolor, so I know that there's like probably a lot of stuff I don't know about needle felting just because I feel like I just started doing it. So to me, I'm just like, oh, thank you everybody for liking my needle felting stuff, but I don't know what I'm doing.
The curious thing with needle felting, I always think, is it's one thing, it's like an artistic mode, but it's also kind of engineering, and that's quite bedded in, isn't it? The ability to make structure.
Yeah, you really have to think about it in, you know, three dimensions. which for me is easy. Like, I don't know why I spent so much time doing paintings, because doing things in 2D is really hard. Like, making that 2D thing look 3D is really difficult, but to make a 3D object for me is a lot easier, which I should have known, because every time I did a sculpture when I was a kid or in college or whatever, like, it was easy. And I was like, oh, this is super easy. But then I was always like, no, I'm going to do painting, because that's the thing. Like, painting's where all the prestige is at. And I did sculpture the whole time.
But that's funny, isn't it? Because you spent so long making 3D out of 2D that when it came to making 3D, you're just pretty fearless in that respect.
Yeah, it's really easy to get it to be three dimensions. But I would say that my work, a lot of it is pretty flat anyways, because I make it to hang on a wall. So it's usually not super deep. But I really like even with these to put like little shine spots on them and stuff, and to make them look realistic in 3D.
I think one of the secrets seems to be with your work, it's a lot about the eyeballs.
It's my favorite part.
Do they come first? Do you get the eyeballs, or do you kind of, you make a thing and you're right, I'm ready for the eyeball now?
So I make the thing. Like, I sort of save that. Like, my favorite parts are the eyes and the mouths. I save those for last. So I'll like with the, like a donut or something, I'll just make the donut and I'll do all the stuff for it so that it looks like a donut. And then I'll start adding weird faces or eyes or mouth or nose or something on it, just like randomly. But yeah, it's always my favorite part. Like, I always save my favorite part for last.
When does the donut, is there a turning point when it stops being just a donut and you're like, oh no, this is my donut now. This is the donut of arrogance.
when it has its eyes, usually is when I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, donut, I brought you to life.
So just always apologize to them.
Yeah, they're always so sad or so tired or exhausted or exasperated.
Well, because that was the thing, didn't it start with exhausted clouds? Is that kind of like where it began?
Yeah, so I actually just bought this cloud from Amazon. It was like this fluffy cloud, and I saw it on Amazon. It was like, I think this was like 6 years ago or something. And I bought this cloud, and I put it up in my house just because I thought it was, like, I love seeing the elements as like physical things, like plastic fire or like plastic water. And so when I saw this cloud that was made out of this fluffy stuff, I was like, I have to have it. So I put it in my house, and then I was looking at it for a long time, and I was like, you know what it needs is eyeballs. So I had some needle felting stuff from a class I took in college. So I was like, I'm going to make some eyeballs for this. And so I did, and I stuck it up there, and I could not stop laughing. And I was like, this is the silliest thing I've ever made, and I love it so much. So then I was like, I wonder if I can needle felt a whole cloud, because the cloud I made wasn't needle felted. It was just the eyes. So then I started, like, sort of experimenting with polyfill or polyester fiber to see if I could get that to needle felt together. Because I didn't know if it would or not, because it's real slippery. But I did, and so I started making these needle felted clouds. But I, like, maybe like over the last, from like 6 years until like 4 years ago, I made like four or five needle felted clouds. It's mostly still making watercolor paintings at that time, and needle felting was just something I was doing for fun.
2020 was quite a turning point for various reasons, but I know that looking at your feed, there was some. It was like I went through a relief, right? Because I saw there was a thing where you did like 2020, you did a sculpture that was made out of poo. That was the sort of summation of 2020. And then you can see that obviously you'd done some kind of clay painting, like getting those ideas out of your head. I think you might have done some pizza or something like that.
Yeah.
But then there's a relief, I think, for me, because then suddenly you're doing it in needle felting. And I just feel like you must have just gone, oh my God, this is like stabby easiness.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. Like, clouds to me sort of represent, like, what would I say? Like, they're always just being blown around. Like, they're not in control of themselves. So, and that's how 2020 felt, was I just wasn't in control. Couldn't go outside. Couldn't really go to the store or anything. So I started making these clouds that were just sort of representations of my loss of control. Yeah, and I don't know, people loved it. Like, I remember I made this cloud, and I just randomly put it up on my Instagram, because before that I wasn't really putting a whole lot of my needle felting stuff on my Instagram, and I was just like, I'm gonna post this, just a picture. And it got so many more likes than my like normal stuff, and I was like, well, that's cool. But I didn't really like follow up on it or do another one for a while. So but yeah, it was like the signs were there. Like I would post a needle felted thing and people would be like, that's amazing, I love it, and I'd get so much likes, and then I would just be like, no, I'm gonna do a painting. And then I post that 5 likes.
So you said that you had some needle felting stuff because you'd done a workshop on it or something, you tinkered with it beforehand.
Yeah, so when I was in college getting my BFA, I took a class. It was like an all media sculpture class, and one of the projects was a needle felted wearable object. So that's where I learned how to do it. I made these like glasses with like eyeballs hanging down, and that was like my first. That was my first foray into needle felting. And then after that, I really didn't do much needle felting for a while, I would say. That was like 8 years ago or something like that.
Right. And then you picked it up, and then the universe went, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I took a break from school when I had my daughter, and then I went back in 21 to finish my BFA. And during like in between paintings, because I was in like a really intense painting class and it was really burning me out, I was like, I'm gonna do something that's just for me and just fun. So I started making just little needle felted like stars with mouths, or a heart with I think eyeballs or something, and I loved it, and I was just like, this is so relaxing, I love this, these are fun. And I was really excited about them because I was like, these are cool. Like I don't think I posted them for a while, but I was like, I'm really enjoying this because it's not painting. I wasn't burned out from it. And when you're in those classes, they're always like, what does this mean? Or why did you do this? Or why did you use this paint? Or what is this little shadow over here? And like, everything's like critical in the painting and in the painting class. So when I started doing the needle felting stuff, I was just like, I don't care. I'm just going to do whatever. I'm going to make whatever. Like, I don't care if it's sentimental or weird or embarrassing or whatever. It's my thing. And I'm just going to do it. And that's, I think, how they differ from my paintings, I would say.
Is it? I mean, do you think part of it is like the slowness of the process as well? Because it does take time to do these things, even when you've got like a... Because you do machine as well. Not machine, sorry. You do hand felting, don't you? You don't use a machine. So you are doing a lot of stabbing, even if it's with a lot of needles. But I mean, it takes time to make those things, doesn't it? So I guess you can be quite conscientious about how you build the things.
It does take a long time, like not as long as it used to. They take about a week, like for a big-ish one. I can work on it for about 7 days and then it's done. They do take a long time. I would say my paintings take longer though. Maybe that's why needle felting for me is kind of like a break, because it doesn't take as long as a painting to make.
And have you subsequently brought the needle felting into your BFA, or did you just stick to painting all the way through that?
Actually, that's a funny story. So I was like, in my last semester of college, I was making rugs, like
tufted rugs. Yeah, we'll talk about those. Yeah.
So and I was in this independent study where I was making these rugs with a professor, and I had these needle felted things, and I was like, I'm going to have these part of my independent study or whatever. So I would make a rug, and then I'd make a couple needle felted things, and I would show my professor, and he always really loved the rugs, but wasn't so much into the needle felted things, which is fine, because they're kind of kitschy and like silly. And I remember I asked him like on the last critique, I was like, so what do you think about the needle felted things? And he was like, he just shrugs. And he's like, I don't know. And I was like, oh, okay. But he really, really, really was a great professor. That was just one of those funny things where I was like, what do you think? And he's just like, I don't know.
But he liked the rugs.
He liked the rugs, yes.
And yeah, in many ways, like the content of the rugs and the content of the needle felting, it's all that slightly, I don't know how you call it, like bizarre, weird, kitsch. Like it's your thing, isn't it?
Looking.
So, but it's interesting that there's quite like a medium specific appreciation there or something.
Yeah, it was, well, he was my painting professor for a long time. So I feel like the rugs had more to do with painting because they're 2D and they're flat. So I feel like he was more biased towards the rugs. And I don't think he had anybody do rugs yet in any of his classes. So when I started doing the rugs, he was like really excited about it. But I mean, I don't think he'd had anybody do needle felted sculptures either, but
he could only be excited about the one new thing. It was probably have to go and have a professional review if he got excited about the two different things.
Right.
Because I did a podcast with Liv Onrud, who does needle felted rugs. And I mean, she was similar, I think, you know, started out doing painting and then very much used and still does use like the tufted gun as a kind of paintbrush, you know, in that kind of way. So, I mean, I guess it is quite an easy overlap, although I feel like tufted rugs leads you more in a kind of graphic direction, isn't it? You don't get a lot of nuance in the color.
Yeah, that was kind of why I stopped doing it. It was really hard for me to visualize the colors together, because even if you're looking at like a skein of yarn, like when it's cut, it looks different. Like the color is not quite the same as what you were looking at it long ways, because you're looking at it cut through the tufting process. So it was really, that was really hard, like trying to figure out colors or even just buy the right color for my project. Like I would have my thing and I'd be like at the store buying the colors. And then when I got home, I would be working on it. I was like, that was not the right color. It was the wrong choice. So that was really hard with the rug tufting. And I don't really do it anymore. It was very labor intensive. Those like guns, the machines are really heavy.
Yeah. I think you often get a dead shoulder, but at the same time, killer triceps or something, isn't it? Sort of yeah. Like, you probably find you can lift your children. I use my children as casual kettlebells a lot of the time, so you probably know what I mean in that respect. Yeah. But I like the fact that even with the rugs, you know, I think your version of weird was coming through there. But I guess, yeah, the needle felting. And like you say, even with those charms, like you make a star, you make a moon, you put an eyeball on them, you put a mouth on them, you turn them into these little weird beings and off you go, I suppose, really.
Right. Anything. Like I made this pear this one time and I was just, I'm going to put some eyes and a mouth on it and see where that goes. And that post did like crazy well. People loved it. And I was like, it's just a pear with eyes and a mouth. Like, I liked it, but I just couldn't believe everybody else liked it, too. I was like, what is wrong with you guys?
I guess you must have dived into the world of needle felting a bit since you've taken it on. Are there artists that you admire? Are there people that you look up to and you think, okay, I can see, like, where I'm going or where they're coming from?
Yeah, there's I'm really bad with names, but there's an artist on Instagram, and he makes these, giant needle felting projects, like bigger than me, like huge, like masks and sculptures, and they're gigantic, and I'm pretty sure they're all wool. They're amazing and they're so weird and I love them so much. I really wish I could remember his name.
Is it Paolo Del Toro? Because
maybe
I had him pegged as somebody who I thought would be a sort of peer of yours, because he's got that sort of surreal, slightly Robert Crumb kind of vibe about his work a lot of the time.
No, it could be.
Yeah, I think because they are, they're like huge, aren't they? They're like this, you know, I don't know what he does with them when he's finished, you know what I mean? Just like if he's got his a lounge, he's just got massive masks on them. But I think, I mean, that's where it's exciting, because I think there's a lot of like needle felting does get a little bit like crafty. People will make a fox or a robin. So then when someone comes along and even just, makes a piece of like a pear with some eyeballs in it or something, it's so weird. It's such an outlier that I think people get really excited by it.
I think that's what it is. It was like, because like, don't get me wrong, like needle felting a cat that looks like a cat is amazing. Like that's just really cool. Yeah. Or like a mouse, that kind of stuff's amazing. But that's, you know, that's not my vibe. So when I started working with it, I was just like, what weird stuff can I make? And even in watercolor, I was always pushing it. Like, how far can I take this? Like, how good can I get at this? Like, what's the furthest I can go? And so when I started doing the needle felting, I was like, can I make that eye look shiny? Can I make this really dry medium look like it's wet? that kind of stuff. So I really wanted to push it to see what I could do with it.
I always really liked, there's an artist called Moxie, and she did my felt to scale to column back in the day, so like 2010, stuff like that. And she once did an installation piece that was basically, it was video cameras and pipes and kind of boxes with meters on them. So it almost looked like it was just a bit of German plumbing or something, you know. She would do like, and I just really loved that, like hard, boring object made out of needle felting, because it was such a contrast with like the medium. Yeah, I guess yours just takes that and drops some acid on it.
I adore like what I do is I sort of just make things into like give them their own little personalities. But I also love to see like somebody needle felt like a rock. You know what I mean? Needle felt something that's not needle felting. You know what I mean? Like a trash can. Like that would be awesome.
That's bound to happen at some point, the trash can of apathy. I feel like we could just do a game with you where we just go, the object of emotion, and we'll just like rattle off like 450 ideas or something. My favorite is the grilled cheese sandwich of acceptance. I almost feel like he's quite a profound piece because he's about acceptance as well, which seems like it's turning a corner.
Yeah, it was that one was I'm trying to think of how I was feeling, like what I was doing when I was making that.
Do you know what it reminded me of when you wrote something? It was almost like, it's a bit like there's a thing of this too shall pass, you know, when you're having an ordinary moment and the magic's there, but at the same time you're like, oh, it's gonna change.
I know, I remember what I was feeling when I made it. My then 5-year-old had just started kindergarten. And so it was like this transitional period where she wasn't with me all the time. And before that, she was with me all the time. I work from home, so she was just always with me. And so when she started school, like that whole first week of her school, I just cried. It was like a mess, like snot cry everywhere. Like, I hope she's okay. And then she hated school. So it made it even harder because I'd drop her off and she'd just be screaming and crying and like grabbing me. And they're like pulling her off me to get her into class. It was awful. And so I made this sandwich that was sort of about that, just like remembering like, oh man, you know, things have to change and they're gonna be different. And now she's fine, she's great, she loves school. But that was a really hard time, and I made a bunch of pieces during that period of time that were all about the same thing. I think I made the ghost was about that too. It was rough.
It's so nice. I can remember the first time I ever dropped Flora, my oldest, off to nursery. So like, what's she gonna have been, like 2.5, something or other like that, and just like dropping her off and then sitting in the car and having a little cry, just be like, oh, she's not my baby anymore. I mean, she still is, do you know what I mean? Whereas now, get out the door,
get out here. Me.
Can't do it anymore. But I think that's interesting, isn't it? Because then it's almost like you are also documenting these moments. So even though these pieces are like abstract and surreal and absurd, they're also like moments of Audrey.
Yeah, it's just like, if I don't know, I'm feeling sad about something, like remembering something that happened a million years ago and like feeling really embarrassed that I said something stupid, I'll just like make a pie about it or something.
I mean, is food often the thing that you make?
I love it. I remember when I was a kid, there was a commercial for these toys and they were called Food Fighters.
Right.
And I loved them. I thought they were so cool. It was like a chicken leg and he had like a helmet on and a gun. And, and like a chocolate chip cookie that was angry and it was like going to murder the chicken leg. You know, they were like, it was like a warring factions of these like fast food items. Uh-huh. I just loved them. I thought they were so cool. I never had them. Like, I loved that stuff. Or when McDonald's started doing the chicken nugget buddies, I thought those were so cool. I was like, that is awesome. Like, I don't, like a fascination with me for like food that's alive, like anthropomorphic food. So like, I loved it.
How do you feel about the California raisins?
Yes. I loved that Christmas special. I remember when I was a kid, like vividly burned in my mind because I thought it was so awesome.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NEEDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.